Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Join us, 603-283-6160. If you'd like to do that, that's 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki, and Bonnie.
And we got sort of blindsided a bit by Jamie, I think from Alabama. Was it Georgia? I don't remember now.
Alabama.
Yeah. Thank you. Jamie asked us a question about transitioning and whether or not we felt it was okay for 16 or 17-year-olds. I mean, the way it was portrayed was, you know, in the worst possible, you know, light. What do you think about them cutting off, you know, or forcing or having kids do sex changes or whatever? It's like, well, I get why they call it gender reassignment surgery now. They don't even call it that anymore, right? Now it's gender affirmation surgery, and I don't want to even get into why they're calling it that versus what it should be. As a general rule, I suspect that for 99% of trans people out there, bottom surgery would be a bad idea.
Yeah.
That's just my personal opinion. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm just a trans person. And I would suggest before a person gets bottom surgery that they spend a long, long time seriously considering what it's going to be like to have that surgery.
And because of that, it just seems like in most cases, I say, like, go ahead and have sex when you're 16 to 17. Who cares? You're old enough to have sex. But yeah, in something like that, I mean, having sex with somebody doesn't change your life for the rest of your life. Just have safe sex and don't get pregnant and don't get an STD. And I don't know why people act like it changes your life for the rest of your life, and it's traumatic no matter what. It doesn't matter what the sex was like. It's trauma. I don't understand that.
Puritans, maybe. I mean, that's right. And I mean, look at how they define virginity or how they've set up virginity, right?
You lost it. You never get it back.
Yeah, they're so full of crap that in their worldview, what they really believe is that having sex with a man is such a major thing that it will fundamentally change you for the rest of your life.
Right. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
No. But that's the mythology they created. Just sex is this great, big, wondrous thing. And it's like, no, it's not.
Well, and it's also a way to weaponize sexuality, right? Like, people can't explore. Like, sexuality is such an important thing. And it's just a way to make people feel dirty for natural human functions.
My friend who is a virgin was like, should I have sex with this guy? I'm just like, I just don't know if I should have him be the first one. I was like, someone's got to be your first one.
Yeah, fair point. But you're right. You're absolutely right in that having sex isn't a life-changing thing, right? You're not going to live with the consequences of having sex for the rest of your life if you're 16 and you get drunk in a field one night, right? Probably. I mean, if you get pregnant, you choose to carry that baby
different to
term, then yeah, it's going to affect you for the rest of your life. But in and of itself, having sex is not going to fundamentally change your life. However, bottom surgery will.
No, that's what I was trying to get at. I forgot why we were talking about sex.
And, you know, I mentioned the book Nevada recently because I did read it. And one of the things that it highlights is that the trans character in there, Maria, she has gender dysphoria about the male parts of her body. Any interaction with them whatsoever gives her anxiety or she disassociates. Or I don't understand what that's like, right? And I'm not going to claim to. I don't understand what that's like. It may be that bad where a person has to have gender reassignment surgery or sexual reassignment surgery or gender affirmation surgery or whatever the hell you want to call it in order to deal with that. But I tend to think it's probably unlikely that that's true for most people. And I suspect, again, I'm not a therapist, I'm not an expert, I suspect that therapy can help you get past that without having to go to sexual reassignment surgery.
What my real fear about the sexual reassignment surgery is that, like with a lot of procedures, people that are getting it aren't told the full extent of all of the possible complications.
Dude, it's not even the complications.
And where it's such a new thing.
It's not even necessarily the complications. I've had two surgeries, and I was woefully unprepared for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
In neither one of these surgeries, both of them done by the same surgeon, did the surgeon be like, okay, look, this is going to cause you major difficulties for a very long time. Right? This is, yes, you're going to be in and out. You're not going to stay in the hospital. And, you know, you're not going to be, like the vocal surgery, you're not going to be able to talk for 3 weeks, but then you'll be more or less fine. That was how they portrayed it. I was like, okay, I can go 3 weeks without talking. He didn't specify that for the rest of my life, I was not going to have the vocal tone and vocal quality that I had previously. In fact, I have a follow-up meeting with them this upcoming Monday. I was supposed to go Tuesday, but I put it off because they botched the vocal surgery, and you know, it's time for me to actually deal with that now that I don't have other things to deal with. So anyway, they didn't warn me that it was probably going to be more like 6 months before my voice lost the scratchiness, because you can go back to those episodes from June of last year where my voice was still tremendously scratchy, and it was because of that vocal surgery. Or whatever, or the pain that persisted in my throat as a result of the surgery for a long period of time. And they didn't tell me that in regard to the forehead surgery that I had, that, you know, yes, you're going to feel fine, it's not going to hurt after a week or so, but, like, it's still going to cause some problems. Like, there's still a bump up here, there's some bumps here, and if you touch it the wrong way, it still hurts. And mm-hmm. These are long-term effects of having these surgeries that I wasn't told anything about.
No, because you might not have gotten it if you were told. Maybe you would, but there's a lot of people where if you tell them all of those things, they'll say, you know what, never mind.
Yeah,
I'm not going to spend the money to do this anymore.
I would not have gotten the vocal surgery if I had known.
And the same thing with, you know, females who have gotten a breast augmentation, they were not told any of the possible side effects. And all they knew is, girls get boob jobs all the time. Totally normal. Totally, you know, and then they almost died because of it.
Oh my gosh.
And their body rejected the implants.
I knew a girl
are the things that surgeons don't tell you.
I knew a girl that got a nose job, and she lived out in the middle of nowhere where I did in Utah. So she came back, and then her nose just started bleeding, like, profusely and had to go, you know, 50-plus miles away. And that would be a terrifying experience.
What if she died, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that can happen. And you sign waivers and stuff where it's like, you know,
not to mention,
there might not be something you can do about it.
The actual complications, right? Like, they put staples in my head, right? What they did with the forehead surgery was they cut off my face, basically. They chiseled away some skull, and they stapled my face back on. Sounds gruesome. It is tremendously gruesome, right? But anyway, so after a week or so, I went back down there to get the staples taken out, and as I was driving home, I was like, man, that feels like it's metal or something. So I get home and I get a friend. She stopped by and I was like, can you check? And sure enough, they had missed like 5 staples.
5? Right? I thought it was just 1. They missed 5.
No, it was multiple. I don't know the exact number, but it was between 3 and 5.
One is...
Right. They missed several staples, and like
they should have it written down.
Right,
how many
they
are there?
Okay, they should count, but they don't.
So there's a thing where in operating rooms, there is a scrub tech or whoever it is, they do a count. It is very important to do the count of how many sponges, how much gauze, how many scalpels, every single thing that is in the operating room, there is a count that is done before that person gets closed up, because you don't want to leave a gauze or a piece of equipment inside of somebody that could kill them.
Right.
So it's a very important thing. So I'm just wondering why they wouldn't do that.
Well, this wasn't during the surgery. This was, they put the staples on after the surgery.
But they should have that written down. They should know.
You would think so.
And
right.
They should do
it
a count afterwards.
Okay, we put 20 staples.
Aria, Aria had 20 staples in her head. I took 20 staples out. You would think that's basic.
You would think so. But evidently that didn't happen, and I had to go back down. But, like, what if I lived in California? Because this surgeon that I use, top of his field, right? So it's not. It's possible that someone would fly all the way out here from California to use this guy, and then what are they supposed to do? Because they made me go back down. I was like, can't I just, like, go to the... the urgent care clinic here and get them taken out. It's like, well, you should really go to the surgeon who did all of this. And like, okay,
oh, you mean
fine,
the one
whatever.
That screwed up?
Right. So, I mean, that's when I had this conversation with them Monday. I mean, this is the where I'm coming from. It's like, hey, you remember that time you guys left staples in my head? Because, I mean, I remember that time, and I had to spend 2.5 hours driving back down here so you could do it again after I had driven down here 2.5 hours the day before. I remember all of that. So anyway, lots of complications can happen in surgery, and those are relatively minor surgeries. I mean, they're complicated because no surgery is simple, but like forehead contouring or brow lift surgery, which is what I had on my forehead, tremendously more simple than what we're talking about when it comes to sexual reassignment surgery. And you're going to lose an organ of your body forever.
I mean, there could be nerve damage. You could lose feeling and talk about body dysmorphia. Yeah. I mean, what if it gets worse? And, you know, I know there's a bunch of what ifs. I'm not trying to, like, fearmonger right. or, like, convince people who are dead set on getting these operations. But I have just seen and heard of things going horribly wrong. Where it just might not be worth it, and there might, and it sounds awful to like suggest people get therapy, right?
I guess it does, but it shouldn't, because I live in a world, you know, when I grew up, it was frowned upon. You're in therapy? What's wrong with you? But that's not true. Now, almost everyone I know has a therapist, and it's been normalized. Thankfully, having a therapist has been normalized, but I don't trust the therapists that are out there today, because they're too quick to say, yes, you should start taking hormones and get gender reassignment surgery, instead of like, well, is this actually right for this person who has gender dysphoria or body dysphoria or whatever? They use transgenderism and these surgeries as ready-to-go solutions to problems that may not... Maybe this person just wants to wear drag on weekends or whatever, and now you've got them permanently changing their life, and their wife is going to divorce them or whatever. Maybe all of that wasn't really necessary for this particular person, but because of the social climate that we're in, the therapist isn't even allowed to say, well, you may not be trans. You may just like wearing women's clothes every once in a while.
Well, and kind of going back to Jamie, I think her name was, the caller before that asked the question. So going back to what she was kind of asking about with like children and teenagers, I think a lot of kids are experimenting with maybe wearing, you know, the opposite gender's clothing or doing things that aren't part of gender roles, or, you know, they're just exploring themselves and their sexuality. And I'm afraid that in this current climate, they will jump to, oh, I'm trans, which is fine, even if they want to, if they want to explore that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And decide, yeah, I legit am trans, or no, I'm not. If they need to explore that, I think that's great. But I think to jump to getting operations and surgeries, especially gender reassignment surgery, where there could be a lot of, I mean, you get a boob job, you can get those taken out, like that can be fixed.
Sure.
I don't think you can fix.
No, there's no
having, you know, that's kind of just permanent, and there can be permanent damage done. So I'm just afraid that some teenagers might be getting pushed into this or encouraged when they just need more time to think about it, you know?
Yeah, I don't think bottom surgery is right for everyone. I would speculate that the number of people it's right for is very, very low. It's a relatively small percentage of trans people. In fact, only like, I had to look this up recently in part of a disagreement I'm having with the government about some things. Only like 1 in 3 trans people are even interested in bottom surgery.
Yeah, so I mean, that cuts out people who like maybe can't afford it or blah, 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 all that stuff. Those people just genuinely don't want it at all.
Right.
Yeah, the only trans people I know don't have it. So I've never met anybody that has had the surgery to like compare it to, but I don't know.
There's a lot of treating people as though they're not really trans unless they either A, want or have had bottom surgery.
Which is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, and I don't know where that comes from. I don't think that getting an artificial organ is going to make you any more of a man or any more of a woman. That's not where your manhood or womanhood is really coming from, in my opinion. But let's go to the phones. We do have David on the line from Georgia. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
So, good evening, guys. Three quick things.
Yep.
First of all, these shows about religion are some of my least favorite shows that you guys do, surprisingly.
Okay.
I like your new shows and things better. That's just my opinion.
Okay, fair.
Although you did bring up a good point about something I didn't think about. I've always considered myself just agnostic, but you mentioned agnostic theist, and I think that would actually apply better to me because, personally, you can't convince me that there's not a God, but I don't believe that he works in the world like people think he does. I think that either time runs differently for him, like he's on the toilet taking a dump or something like that. you know, that kind of thing. And he doesn't care about us day to day like some people think he does.
I buy into that. I mean, that's generally what I would describe as the deist God. And deism is its separate own sort of belief system. But most of the founding fathers of America were deists. It says a lot that deism used to be considered an atheist if you were a deist. Like Thomas Paine, he was a deist, but because of the culture in which they lived, everyone being Christian and Puritans and all of that, his peers at the time considered him an atheist, so much so that they denied him a burial in consecrated ground. And
I didn't know that.
One of his fans or relatives or something ended up digging up his bones and bringing them somewhere else so that he could have a consecrated burial. I don't remember all the specifics there, but it was all because he was a deist, which meant he believed in a God, but it was his God was an engineer, a scientist, a mathematician who created all of the universe and all the rules that it's going to follow, and then he just let things play out. Versus the theist God, which is an interventionist God. And that's a term, that's terminology I've forgotten about. There's the interventionist God and the non-interventionist God. And the deist one is non-interventionist. Much as you describe, he created the universe, or they created the universe, and they're just letting it do its own thing. They're letting the universe explore itself, or however one wishes to characterize it. I could buy into that sort of God.
It's like one of those computer screensavers. You just sit there and watch it.
Yeah.
See what it does.
I wanted to get into this earlier as well, because that's the theistic God, the interventionist God, that's the one I don't get, the one that created the universe and then climbed inside of it. It's like a video game, right? I can create a video game, but I can't just climb into and exist within that video game. The closest I can come is creating an avatar that is going to represent me. And maybe I can go into that video game and I can give myself God mode and superpowers and I can be all these things, which is why I get the concept of Jesus Christ, God's avatar, mm-hmm. with God mode powers. Yeah, he can walk on water. You know, he can fly. He can do whatever he wants because he's got cheats enabled in the video game that he made, right? But that's not how Christians characterize any of this, even though that to me would make sense. But God himself still wouldn't be able to climb into the video game. The best he'd be able to do is an avatar. But when you say this, like, well, no, God can do anything. Of course he can do that. How do you create something and then get inside of that thing you created?
But
like,
if he's the creator of everything, where is he outside of it? That's what I don't understand. I don't like this idea that he could be outside of it when it is supposed to be everything. We're not talking about who created the earth. We're talking about who created everything.
Also a fair point. Thank you so much for the call tonight, David. I'm sorry you don't find the shows to be among your favorites. As I said, it inspired you enough to call in and talk about it. So
yeah.
Captain said it's one of his favorite shows.
Yeah, I tend to like it. It has a good flow, and we're all engaged, and it's interesting topics. Let's keep going, though. We have Alu on the line from here in New Hampshire. Alu, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hi, I just jumped in a few minutes ago to a super interesting conversation. I always thought of God as necessarily being omnipotent, but Aria, your point might be the theory that makes the most sense, that Jesus is God's avatar.
thank you. I mean,
that actually,
yeah, if I was going to buy into the Christian mythology, that would, and I don't want to cheapen it by calling it mythology because I respect other people's beliefs, but if I was going to accept Christianity, that would generally be the perspective that I would have to take it at, right? Because that's what makes the most sense to me.
So I was listening to last night's episode because I listened to the podcast because I'm behind, and it seems like Jessica from Missouri came to New Hampshire, but now is wondering whether she can handle the cost of living here.
As I understand it, I don't know anything more than what was revealed on last night's show, but it did seem that way. Jessica is an older lady. She's retired, I believe.
Yeah.
She lives on a pension, and she was visiting New Hampshire. I don't think she was intending to move here at this time. But she was visiting just to see what it was like, and the cost of living is scaring her away.
Yeah, I hear that. I would implore her to come to the New Mover Party. It's for new movers and visitors and everyone who likes liberty in Manchester. And it should be on the calendar, the fsp.org/calendar. And it's this Tuesday coming up, I believe, February 7th.
Well, she is still here, at least tonight. She did say that she was intending to return to Missouri, but I don't know exactly when that is. So hopefully she's out there listening. It would definitely be good to meet her and for her to meet other Free Staters, because there is a strong support network. And I think she mentioned that she can rent her entire house or apartment or whatever for like $300 a month or something in Missouri. You're not going to find that here in New Hampshire. And, you know, she's 60-something years old, so it's not likely that she wants to deal with it. But if your budget is $300 a month, then realistically you're probably renting a bedroom in a shared apartment.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another option I was going to get to. A lot of, you know, Free Staters, mostly younger, but some people who are older could also rent a bedroom from other like-minded Free Staters that they get along with. But also, if she wants to keep working a little bit, there's so much work around here that pays so well. She can work from home or do something else, do something pretty easy part-time to also help pay the bills here. So that's another option for her.
Well, and that's typically what it is, right? The cost of living kind of matches what people are making.
Right.
But if you're already on a fixed income and you're retired, that gets a little trickier.
Yeah, New Hampshire, as much as I love New Hampshire, I don't know about it as a retirement destination. You know, I mean, she's 60-something years old. I don't remember her exact age. She told us last night. She's retired. She's going into, you know, the rest of her life. Even if she's a diehard libertarian, I'm not convinced that New Hampshire is necessarily the right place.
I've been to Springfield, Missouri, where she's from several times, and that's like retirement destination.
Is it? Sort of like Florida. Thank you so much for the call tonight, Alu. Hopefully Jessica is listening and she can, you know, get in on the New Movers Party coming up this Tuesday. As you mentioned, it is on the calendar. She can find that.
It's fsp.org, I believe.
Thank you, but I don't remember the calendar website. It's probably
fsp.org/calendar
or something like that.
It's the first Tuesday of every month, I believe, the New Mover Party.
And where is it?
Manchester.
Yeah, but like, is it at Murphy's Tap Room?
Right?
Or is it at the Quill?
Well, if it's a New Movers Party, wouldn't it be at the New Movers House? Isn't that usually how these things go?
No. That's, this I think is at the Quill. I could be mistaken, though. But
it's like a potluck. It's not move-in.
It's different than like the move-in days where we help people unload.
Okay.
I've never been, but it's just a potluck at the same place. I've seen it in the same place in
it's
these
probably
pictures.
The Quill then.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Okay, I've never been to the Quill.
I've been to the Quill. It's a nice place. You know, I played poker there at Liberty Forum. Is that what I was doing there? I don't remember now. It was a good time. It felt like you would expect an anarchist hangout to feel like, really. It was cool, though. Definitely would recommend, if you're visiting New Hampshire and you're interested in libertarianism, check out you don't have to have a membership in the Quill to go there, I don't think, so check out the Quill. You can find it online. It's easy to find libertarians in New Hampshire. Easy to do. There's also the Shell.
The Shell is really cool. I went to a party there on Halloween.
And that's the Seacoast version of the Quill. There used to be the Keene Activist Center here in Keene, but of course there isn't now. 603-283-6160 if you want to weigh in on any of these subjects and more coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
Do you ever get the feeling that the world is being held together with duct tape? Every day we're thrown some new meaningless drama in the fake news to distract us from the reality we're all about to face. Between the government trying to print their way out of debt, military conflicts, the disintegration of our most trusted institutions, and a looming food shortage, preparedness is no longer a choice. It's a necessity. You can trust My Patriot Supply. Our emergency food kits come packed with tasty meals, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit for each person in your family. Self-reliance is the only alternative to government food lines. Time is running out. Become ungovernable. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and save on dozens of different emergency food kits while you can. These kits are in stock, ship fast, and arrive in unmarked boxes for your privacy. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com before the next crisis strikes. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. Vice President Kamala Harris taking time to address those gathered at Tyre Nichols' funeral in Memphis on Wednesday. She spoke of the agony his family must face.
Who mourn the life of a young man who should be here today.
Harris also spoke of the agony when facing what happened the night of January 7th.
Through an act of violence at the hands and the feet of people who had been charged with keeping them safe.
Nichols died 3 days after that confrontation. A transgender woman in Ohio is facing indecent exposure charges after using the women's locker room at a YMCA. 31-year-old Darren Glines, who goes by the name Rachel, was seen nude by other patrons inside in Xenia, just outside of Dayton. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork. You know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-932-5140. 800-932-5140. 800-932-5140. That's 800-932-5140.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live, and you can join us, 603-283-6160, if you want to weigh in. That's 603-283-6160. And with you tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki, and Bonnie.
And I want to say thank you to Ken Covey. That's tonight's amplifier. That means that Ken is a member of the AMPS program. You can find it at amps.freetalklive.com. Stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. So you may have noticed that this is the first time coming back from a break that, you know, we did one of these sort of lead-in things where we talked about something else before diving right back in the subject. Well, normally we'd be talking about Bitcoin.com or the Socratic Experience or My Magic Mud or Divi Wallet or whatever. We've gotten rid of all of those. It's just you and just us now. The AMPS program, That's what we have for Free Talk Live. So check it out, amps.freetalklive.com. If you like the show, if you value the show, show your support with the AMPS program. It only takes $5 per month. That gets you in. And it does come with a number of cool little features, like there's an AMP-only podcast that you get access to and some other cool stuff like that. But really, if you join, it should be because you value Free Talk Live and you want to help show your support. That's amps.freetalklive.com. Ken is a gold level amplifier, which means that Ken is giving $10 per month to the program. Again, we don't ask that, just $5 per month. That's enough to get you in. And someone floated again the idea of, you know, lowering the tiers, and I've seen other people doing this. I don't know, man. I just don't know if it would be worth it.
$5 is just like nothing nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, eggs are $5, it's like a and 50 cents.
Yeah,
a latte is like $7. Well, we bought eggs at Aldi today for $5.30, yeah. So maybe they're more elsewhere.
Yeah.
amps.freetalklive.com if you want to sign up. That's amps.freetalklive.com. I'm going to have to start checking messages there, because really that's a no-brainer. And I'm sure we get some messages there. It's a no-brainer to be interactable with people through the AMPS program. And I'm terrible at that. I'm resolving here and now to stay more on top of that.
Wait, what is that? I mean, Ian checks emails all the time for him from his own email.
Listeners as well, but...
Is it different than...
Well, you'll probably receive a notification via Patreon.
Patreon.
Someone sent you a message, but yes.
Oh.
You can message the creators specifically on Patreon, and they can respond to you, and... Honestly, it is something I should be doing, or I'm sure Ian is doing it as well, but it's something that I should be more on top of as someone who's involved with Free Talk Live. So, amps.freetalklive.com. We were talking here about just this complicated issue of transitioning, and I've been wanting to talk about the book Nevada. So now's as good time as any. And I've mentioned it to an extent because the character in there has gender dysphoria when it comes to her anatomy, where any interaction with it causes severe distress, causes her to disassociate or pretend like she's somewhere else. And again, I'm not saying what's right for anyone. I don't know. Maybe bottom surgery is right for you. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But I would suggest that it should be considered the last resort of other solutions.
I mean, I've heard of similar things happening with like rape victims or people who are molested as children, where if they have any sort of sexual contact, they disassociate, and it's, you know, horrible.
Well, that's a result of trauma, though. Being trans isn't necessarily traumatic.
But I've just heard of, and that's true, but I've just heard of similar things. So I believe it because I've heard of this happening before in other cases.
Maybe I'm fortunate in this regard because so much of my early interactions, or not interactions, my experiences of... observances of transgenderism in general was through pornography and shemales, which were always like ideal to me, right? So it never seemed to me as though a woman had to be completely cut off from that. I don't know, man. It never seemed necessary to me, and I feel bad for these people, and if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do, but I don't like the way that it's being perceived in the media or just in general. And to its credit, Nevada did not do this as sort of the final stage of transgender. That's when the caterpillar finally turns into the butterfly. It's not like that. What Nevada did do, however, it made me think about my transition in ways that I've never really thought about it before. And I think that's what makes it valuable. Now, it is very woke in places. It's not nearly as woke as you would expect, but based on the afterword by the author. The afterword is tremendously woke. It's all about, you know, intersectionalism and anarchism and how that relates to gender issues and race issues. Mm-hmm. And it gets really complicated, and I can't pretend to understand any of it, right? Maybe there's stuff there that I need to look into. Maybe this that I've done is problematic, or maybe I need to evaluate this because I'm racist and I don't even realize it. All sorts of things like that. I'm not saying none of it's possible. I'm just saying it's never occurred to me. Other things that haven't occurred to me is the giant disparity between being trans and being genderqueer. Now, for those who don't know, genderqueer is like non-binary sort of thing. It's like you just do whatever you want, right? And you're not trying to be female, you're not trying to be male, you're just trying to do whatever you want that makes you happy. But there's this huge disparity there between trans people and genderqueer people, like me, right? Obviously, a feminist, you don't have to shave your legs, right? Women's liberation, feminist, women don't have to shave their legs, right? It doesn't make you any less of a woman to not shave your legs. But if you're trans, you can't play that game.
You can.
Yeah, No one's going to take a baseball bat to your shins for playing that game, but it defeats the purpose of trying to be trans. If you see someone who's, quote, trying to be trans, and I hate that I even said that, but that's the terminology I'm going to go with for the moment.
Okay.
So they're trying to be trans, but they have, you know, a mustache and hairy legs. And sure, they're wearing women's clothes and they got makeup on, but this person has hairy legs and they have a beard.
You're sending me mixed signals here.
Well, they're not even a trans person at that point. The most you could call them is like non-binary or genderqueer.
Okay.
Right. There's somebody I used to work with that basically looked, I mean, in every way, exactly like a man and was not on hormones, but just wore women's clothes. And he never said he was trans and went by he.
Sure. I mean, there's an older man here in Keene who, I think his name is Larry, he walks around in dresses. But if you're trans, you do have to shave your legs. You do have to conform to some of these stereotypes, right? Otherwise, you end up becoming genderqueer. You get lumped into that category. Or, at best, people immediately read you as trans, which that's going to happen anyway. One of the things I don't like about the book is that it doesn't use the word passable, but it does. It bends over backwards to not say passable, but it clearly means passable. It uses the term, she was read as trans. That means not passable. I'm sorry, I don't know how to tell you this, but... And so it's just persistently use that terminology. But if you do these things that are fine in accordance with feminism, then you sort of, you don't stop being trans, but you do sort of become more genderqueer, right? And like the vibrant eyeshadow and the bright red hair and all of these other things that I do, these flamboyant, boisterous, colorful, vibrant things, they're sort of the opposite of what cis women do. Right? Like, the goal of being a trans woman is to blend in with cis women. There's nothing about me that blends in with anyone of any gender, right? So, what the goal of the trans person in theory is to blend in with, as I said, cis women, but everything I do is calculated almost to not do that. So it's forced me to reevaluate some things like that I've never really given any thought to whatsoever. Like, I started dyeing my hair red because it made me look more feminine. And it does. And I've started wearing my eyeshadow like this because I liked it. But it does stand out a bit too much. It does separate me, however, to whatever degree, from every other. Like, there's three people here tonight. You're both cis girls. Neither one of you have vibrant eyeshadow on.
But I know but a I did ton in of high girls
school.
Who...
In high school, yes. I do also have people say that a lot. I used to wear eyeshadow like that in high school, but I'm not in high school. But,
it's because I'm lazy now. It's because, like, I used to be like, I put way more effort into how I looked because... peer pressure or whatever. Now it's because I'm just like, I'm married.
Well, and that's the thing. So I know a ton of adult women who wear, like, their makeup to the nines every day, like heavy eyeliner, bright eyeshadow, they have blue hair, or, you know, so I do know a lot of women.
I don't know any.
Really?
I'm the only person I know who regularly wears eyeshadow.
I knew a lot more when I lived in Texas, and I think it's like somewhat of like a, I don't know, like a city thing. Like, lots of people had fake eyelashes there. I don't see fake eyelashes here.
I feel like I'm one of the only girls I work with that doesn't have the, like, fake eyelashes that stay put. The eyelash extensions.
Yeah, the semi-permanent ones. So. Yes, the extensions. Mm-hmm. I don't like how they look.
Well, I'm going to Vegas at the end of this month, so I guess I'll keep an eye out. But, Generally, most people, I mean, it's true whether they do that when they're going out to, you know, the casino at Vegas or not. Most women aren't going to... wear this kind of makeup and have this vibrant hair if they're just going to work or whatever.
Yeah.
I will.
Okay.
But the other thing is, like, since I've moved here, I've toned down lots of stuff just because it's, like, I don't like sticking out so much here. It's here. Like, I don't... It's not that I don't dye my hair black because of that, but I wear a lot different makeup. And I used to love just wearing a crazy outfit in San Antonio, and nobody really even blinks. Like, it's just that there's so many people and everybody is just so different. It's like nobody's going to pay attention to it at all if I'm wearing, like, white fishnets and a miniskirt in the middle of the day doing Uber Eats.
Yeah.
But I feel like I absolutely cannot do that without people being like, what is she doing?
Well,
like,
that's kind of how it is in the country, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not disagreeing with any of what you're saying, though. I just don't want you to think that I was saying, like, yeah, only high schoolers wear colorful, and I'm too old for that now, or something.
No, I didn't interpret it that way at all.
I also just don't own any. Like, I just, like, I don't know, haven't been spending a lot of money on makeup.
But, you know, I do encounter, that is one of the responses I get a lot is, or it's from cis women saying, oh, I wish I could do my eyeshadow like that or whatever. It's like, well,
you can. Yeah.
Well, people say that to me all the time about just, like, regular makeup. They're like, I wish I could do eyeliner or whatever. And I'm just like, I've watched literally over a decade of makeup videos. Just do that.
Dude, I haven't watched.
It'll only take you 10 years.
Yeah. Well, that's surprising because I think the way that you do eyeshadow is really, like, good, like, by the book. You. Because it's like, there are some people that just, like, they don't realize what certain placements are doing on their face. Maybe you're, like, naturally artistic because I'm not.
If I'm naturally artistic, then makeup is the only area where it manifests. Because I can't draw, I can't paint, I can't do any of this other stuff, right? Not graphically. Sure, I can create music and I can write or whatever, but you ask me to draw something, I can't do it. Even looking at something simple like Master Shake and trying to draw, like Master Shake from Aqua Teen Hunger Force and trying to draw it.
Oh, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I got
even
you
something, it's just a cup, it's a milkshake. Even drawing something simple like that, I've got to look at it in order to do it. So, I mean, I'm not good graphically.
No, I'm the same way.
But I did get some tips from my sister here and there. Like, she has mentioned stuff to me, like the white jumbo. And I don't want this to come into turn into a makeup tutorial, but she has given me some tips. But I've never, like, watched anyone do makeup or anything like that. It's just picking up tips here and there and checking out what works and what doesn't work. Like, tonight I have the pink, double pink thing going on. I initially had them backwards where the darker color was on the inside. I was like, that doesn't work for whatever reason, so I reversed it.
Yeah.
It's because it makes your eyes look smaller. Because, like, the lighter color, that's why I thought that you probably watched, like, makeup videos.
Yeah, like, I did not know that.
The lighter color on the inside opens and brightens your eyes, and it's natural to, I don't know what it is, it's just something artistic. You should, I don't know. Anyone
I just noticed
listening?
That it looks better when I do it that way. It seems to fit better.
That does kind of say that you have, like, you know, an eye for it.
But because of Nevada, I suddenly am thinking about some of these topics, right? Like, I'm not saying I want to stop dyeing my hair red. In fact, I just bought some hair dye. I'm probably going to dye it tonight, given, you know, I am going to Vegas in 3 weeks. I don't want to have, you know, brown roots when I do that. Or am I just going to go back to being a brunette? I don't know, you know? Maybe I'll give it a shot. But if what I want is to blend in with cis women, then some of the things that I do has to be changed, or maybe not changed, but there's a decision to make about whether I want to keep doing my own thing or whether or not I actually want to blend in with women.
Yeah,
and that's a.
I mean, it just sounds boring to blend in.
It is.
I mean, obviously,
but
you want
as a trans person, that's what you want.
Feminine, yeah.
But it's a very feminine thought process in general. Like last year, I had this whole thought process that went on for months about should I stop dyeing my hair black. Like, a man's never going to sit around thinking about stuff like that. There's like, Ian doesn't understand why it's a big deal. It's still a big deal. I'm like, should I dye my hair black again? He's like, I like your hair any color. It literally doesn't matter at all.
But for you, that was more like you liked your hair black, but you were worried about, like, the chemicals in the hair dye, right?
Right, and also I was afraid that it was, like, my hair wasn't... I had to choose between do I want my hair to get longer or be black, and I actually don't think that it made any difference.
Yeah, probably not.
I thought that it was, like, making my hair unhealthy, but I think I'm going to go back to black. Yeah.
I don't think it's good for hair. I mean, and certainly the bleach and all of the heavy chemicals I use for this shade of red, definitely not good for hair, but, like, is it worth it, right? The beauty is pain, right? And there isn't any pain in dyeing your hair, right? But it's not good for your hair, so it's sort of similar. I don't know. I also don't know what these people are talking about. Before we got into all of that, we were talking about religion and Christianity, which is special to me as a trans person because so much of Christianity is anti-trans. But anyway, this article from the Economic Collapse blog talking about how Christianity and faith in general are in the decline. They have a chart. Of course, they don't mention the chart. They don't show the chart. They link it showing that religion has been in decline greatly in recent years. And they do have some charts here about how Christians now represent something like 63%. That's the world Christians live in, though, right, where 63% of people being a single religion just isn't enough
for them. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point, because I'm wondering what the other religions are, you know? I mean, that's over half. That seems like a lot.
I mean, I just don't know how spoiled your worldview has to be and how spoiled you have to be to paint something like this as a problem. Do they remember what the Roman persecution of Christians was like? Because they're quick to scream persecution. And look, this guy in Colorado who keeps getting sued for not baking gay and trans cakes, I get it, right? He's being persecuted for his beliefs. There's no doubt of that. They're actively seeking him out and targeting him because he's a Christian and because they know he doesn't want to bake the stupid cake. But that's not most Christians. And even if we do say, oh, that's horrible persecution, which it is, that doesn't even begin to compare to the Romans crucifying and beheading Christians.
Well, and I think Christianity got to such a major point where it was 70-whatever percent, like this article says, because they were conquering and they were going to other nations and they were, you know, forcing people to believe in this religion or convincing them or scaring them or whatever.
Someone recently told me when we were talking about the drag queen thing, they were like, well, Aria, you tend to talk like you own the subject. I was like, well, I am the trans person.
Yeah, I hear you kind of do.
I am stripping everything else away. I am the dude wearing women's clothes here. So, like, if one of us is more knowledgeable or claims any sort of ownership of the subject, but what the reason I bring it up is because that's that worldview of the straight, cis, normal, white dude telling me that their opinion about drag queens is every bit as valuable and meaningful as my opinion about drag queens.
Laughable.
Yeah. And I would never, look, if I got a white person here and a black person here, and they're both telling me about the history of racism and how it's affected them in the United States, or just the history of racism in the United States, one of these people has a much more valuable opinion simply because they've experienced it than the other. And I realize that's messed up, you know? That's like, this, you're putting more value in this person's opinion because this person's trans? Or you're putting more value in this person's opinions because this person's black? That's racist.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It is racist. It is kind of messed up. But you know what? Considering what, you know, the straight cis white Christians out there have done to trans people and to black people throughout the centuries, I think your opinion being held in a little bit less high esteem is minor enough that you can get over it.
I mean, I wouldn't even consider that racist. It just, that's what makes sense, right? You know, we have one person who lived through this experience and can, you know,
I don't like the idea that anytime you see color, it's racist. You know, I think it's like, yeah, you have to see it because you have eyes and you have like a brain to comprehend that this black person has a different experience than the white person. So, yeah, I wouldn't call it racist, but you are seeing color, and I think that's the old definition of racism. Like, oh, I just don't see color. I just pretend everyone's exactly the same. But really, other people have different experiences.
Well, and I think part of that is, you know, not to get into conspiracy theory land, but I think part of that is to take away any individuality to create this sense of sameness so we can just all be cogs in the machine. And, you know, we're all the same.
Well, I'm continually trying to grow and evolve and change my perspectives. I want to be a little bit less wrong today than I was yesterday. And in the past, I was one of these, no, it's, I don't see color kinds of people, right? But more recently, I'm like, no, that's wrong. I have to see their color, right? And not judge them or hate them or anything like that because of it, because so many other people throughout history have seen the color of their skin and behaved differently because of that or treated them badly because of that. But refusing to see the being colorblind, as it were, erases a large part of their history or what has shaped them. And that's not right either. So, yeah, I don't want to see color, right? I'm sure that's what everyone ultimately wants to envision as the ideal world where everyone's treated always the same no matter what, but like it is a factor in how people treat. I'm not saying treating anyone worse because of it, but you have to acknowledge the suffering and the history of black people in the United States and what's been done to them on the basis of race. And if you don't see color, you can't acknowledge that truth.
And I think there's also a way to like do it instead of like in a negative way, like celebrating people for the fact that they're individuals and that we all are different and all look different. Like that's a really cool, awesome thing.
And the thing that like some listeners might not understand is that like me, Nikki, and Aria are all individualists in the way that we can understand that somebody can be a race and be completely not like anyone else we've met in the race. It doesn't make people all the same.
You're absolutely right. One of the more interesting things about all of this, and, you know, edgelord libertarians are really bad about it. They're like, well, how come they can have black power? You know, you can have gay pride and black pride and all these other things, but when you say white pride, suddenly you're racist. And it's fundamentally not understanding. I was wanted to talk about Pantera recently. That's why all of this came up, because I know a lot of people who support Pantera. They're like, well, they should be able to say white pride, but no, they shouldn't. Because when they say black pride in the United States, they're not really taking pride in their skin color. You erase, well, not you personally, but America erased their identity.
Yeah.
They don't know if they're from North Africa or Ethiopia or Sudan or Egypt or insert African country. They don't know, because no one kept records of that. They just took these people and brought them here. They don't know where their ancestry lies. They can't take Sudanese pride or Congolese pride or North African pride.
It wasn't very long ago that people were extremely racist in the United States.
Very true. There
was literally segregation. I mean, how many years ago? Like 40 years ago?
Like, people are still alive. I think a lot of people realize, don't think about the fact that
this was recently. Yeah.
People are still alive now.
And it blows my mind that some people cannot understand what you're talking about.
Yep. But you're allowed to have German pride. No one's criticizing anyone for having Italian pride or French pride or Canadian pride or whatever.
And that's the other thing. There's no such thing as black and white. Like, I know that's the easy way to talk about it, and that's the way we've been talking about it, but that was kind of something that was put upon all of us. Like, it makes you less of an individual if you're just white and they're just black.
It also feels like an us and them.
Right, black and white, literally. You know? I mean, why, when nobody calls Mexican people brown, I mean, not nobody, I mean, but it's just like, it's not like people go around saying, I'm brown, blah, blah, blah. It's usually only said as like a joke, because Mexico's right there, and we know that, like, you're from Mexico, or from, you know, whatever country, usually. And I think that the whole black and white thing is weird, and people aren't black or white. I mean, literally, I'm not even white, I'm pink.
Yeah, excellently said. I wish more people understood that. The only time I think I ever hear anyone referring to brown people is when I talk about the United States bombing brown people in the Middle East. And that's because the United States does seem to be racist in exactly that regard. We're out of time for tonight. You can join us in the meantime on our social media server. You can find that at social.freetalklive.com. That's our Mastodon, social.freetalklive.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422. Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.